Hi, everybody. This is Zaina Badisa. I'm 15 years old, a sophomore at Pittsburgh Kappa.
Hi, this is Sarah Watkins. I'm 18 years old, currently taking a gap year, but I will be attending Spelman College in August.
You're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day. So first, we're going to be talking about nonviolence and the philosophy of Martin Luther King. So Sarah, we'll start us off with a quote.
All right. There comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe nor politic nor popular, but he must take it because conscience tells him it is right. Now, that quote was by none other than the great Martin Luther King Jr., who many of us know was a pastor, activist, and a major leader of the civil rights era.
So more about this quote. Well, it's really saying that we have to choose our position because we know it's wise. We can't choose a position because it's what we think is right. We know it's right, so we have to take that position because it's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, absolutely. In Martin Luther King Jr.'s philosophy, he believed in nonviolence, and there were six principles that were really important to him, like the fundamental tenets of this philosophy. So the first one was that nonviolence is a way of life for courageous people.
The second was nonviolence seeks to win friendship and understanding.
The third is that nonviolence seeks to defeat injustice, not people.
The fourth being nonviolence holds that suffering can educate and transform.
And the fifth is nonviolence chooses love instead of hate.
The sixth and last is nonviolence believes that the universe is on the side of justice. So going back to the third principle, which stated nonviolence seeks to defeat injustice, not people, I feel that that one really relates back to the quote. And you can't, nonviolence wants to defeat injustice. Like, you can't tear down a whole group or race because you don't believe in what they're saying, or like, you have to know that nonviolence is...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You have to know that it is not the person necessarily as much as the evil that is in them. That's pretty much it. And then another point that really jumped out to us was that nonviolence chooses love instead of hate. So instead of fighting and hurting people back who hurt you, as kind of a way to turn the other cheek, and that is really what nonviolence is all about.
Okay, on to the second quote. Change does not roll in on the wheels of inavailability, but comes through conscious struggle, but comes from continuous struggle, and so we must straighten our backs and work our freedom. A man cannot ride you unless your back is bent. So you have to work for what you believe in. You can't just sit there and be passive. If you want to make a change, you have to make it happen yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And as that relates to nonviolence, it's the very first principle was that nonviolence is a way of life for courageous people. So just because it is nonviolent does not mean that it is not aggressive or it's not challenging. I think it is very, very, at least mentally challenging way of life. So it takes a lot of courage and determination to live like that and to not not fight back in the same way.
I agree.
Yeah, but right now we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hold my hand while I run this race. Jesus, hold my hand.
While I run this race,
Hi everyone, that song you just heard was Doc Reese, Guide My Feet. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, Music and Conversation about Civil Rights, Past, Present, and Future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, with Zainab Adisa and
Sarah Watkins. If you like what you hear and want to join in the conversation, we'd love to have your participation. You can call or text us at 412-200-5975. And please consider letting other people know that Streaming Justice continues until midnight at slbradio.org.
Okay, everyone, so now I'm going to read a poem by Maya Angelou called Caged Bird. A free bird leaps on the back of a wind and floats downstream to the current ends and dips his wings in the orange sun rays and dares to claim the sky. But a bird that stalks down his narrow cage can seldom see through his bars of rage. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom. The free bird thinks of another breeze, and the trade wind soft through the sighing trees, and the fat worms waiting on a dawn bright lawn, and he names the sky his own. But a caged bird stands on the grave of dreams. His shadow shouts on a nighttime scream. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown and but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom. And so that was Maya Angelou. I bet many of you guys know her. She was a very famous poet, and she recently died, well, last year in 2014. She was a poet, author, and civil rights activist.
Hi, and now I'm going to read a poem by the great Langston Hughes. This poem is called I Too. I too sing America. I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes. But I laugh and eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody'll dare say to me, eat in the kitchen, then. Besides, they'll see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. I too am America. So that was I Too by Langston Hughes.
He was a poet and playwright. So these poems really represent like social justice and inequality. Both of those poets slash authors were African American. And since they were born somewhat long ago, they kind of represent the past of America, and their writing really speaks to the generation of like our generation or new things happening, because when equality for them was not a very persistent thing back then, things have changed now though.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially you can almost hear it in the Langston Hughes poem, him saying like, I too am America, I'm part of this also. This is my country too. So that is kind of it's part of the thinking behind the civil rights movement, is that is the ownership, that this is my country too. This is my home also. I am also part of this.
Another African-American writer straight out of Pittsburgh was August Wilson. He was a playwright, and he died in 2005. But one of his plays I saw being produced last year at Carnegie Mellon, and it was Seven Guitars. And it was based off in Pittsburgh about this boy named Floyd trying to make it and go to Chicago because he's really good at playing guitars. But it circles his life and his life with his friends and how social justice and inequality really faced off with things that they had to deal with back then. because things weren't really always fair. It was based off in the Hill District, and it's just like the recurring theme of African American males fight for like his own humanity and like just understand the things that they had to go through back then. And it's just a very good play. I suggest you guys all see it or read it.
Yeah, August Wilson, we can just see like the mark he's left on our city. Even when we look downtown and we see the August Wilson Center, which was intended to be a place where we could celebrate African-American culture. It's just
an African-American youth today. And it's still a strong, like, vibrant place where we should be able to go and celebrate our heritage together as everyone, not even just African-Americans, but everyone, so they can understand how our history and better learn it for our future.
All in silence we're bound in jail, and no money for their bail. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize.
Doctors and lawyers and teachers and domestics walked together to jail and got to know each other in the cells as they sat next to each other and felt, breathed, and slept the passion that they had about their own desires to be free. But more than that, they came to know each other as people and not as classes, not as a doctor, not as a doctor's wife, not as a domestic, but as a person. And in the cells that housed some 700 of Albany's citizens grew a bond of togetherness which has characterized Albany more than anything else.
They were there, unifying themselves as one, getting to know each other. And we come back to the community, and it's not the same anymore. You find people walking together, talking together, people that would think they would never speak to this person or that person.
The song you just heard was Charles Jones and Cordell Radom reflecting on civil rights. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day, with Sarah Watkins
and Zainab Batisa.
If you like what you hear and want to join in the conversation, we'd love to have your participation. You can call or text us at 412-200-5975. And please consider letting other people know that Streaming Justice continues until midnight at slbradio.org.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
In the summers of 2010 and 2012, students from Carleton University traveled south, covering 2,300 miles over 9 days to study the events, people, and places that commemorate the American Civil Rights Movement. These are the stories of some of those students.
I think about the tour and the experiences that I have often. It's something that you really can't ever forget.
It really changed my outlook to not think with a tunnel vision, to expand and broaden my horizons when it comes to thinking.
We went across the Edmund Pettus Bridge and we started singing, and it was just like so empowering and gave you that sense of solidarity.
I'll never forget walking into the hot church and seeing Rutha Harris. As we were sitting there fanning ourselves, all of a sudden Rutha just stood up and her voice exploded into this church.
And we sung freedom songs.
You got to march with their picket signs, and you got to sing to the top of your lungs.
We met Miss Joanne Bland in Selma. She was an actual foot soldier. She was one person, and she made a huge difference. I can do that. And as a social worker, I have all kinds of stuff laid out in front of me that I got to do, so I have more motivation to do it.
they had to think about that bigger vision because they knew that the change they were fighting for would not be immediate. And so they were fighting for generations ahead of them. To be a visionary like that and to have that dedication and to know that you may not live to see the change is something that's powerful.
If you're in class, hey, you have a textbook that says this is what happened, that's what happened. Whereas we got to actually talk to the people. We actually got to hear the struggle and the hardship in their voice. That was way better than a textbook.
Funding for this project was made possible with support from Carleigh University, the Geibel Institute for Justice and Social Responsibility at Carleigh University, and from individual contributions from Carleigh alumni. You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
Okay, so you just heard a collection of explanations from students who went on the Black Student Tour for colleges?
Absolutely. They went on a civil rights tour with Carleigh. So that was just, those were some of the reflections of what they saw and how it made them feel. Just some feedback from what they got out of it. I think one of the interesting things about that is that they really, like, seeing that in person, that firsthand experience, it made it come alive for them. That it, like the last person said, it was better than just a textbook. So just seeing that in person really brought out, just made it so much more real than just reading history or just being told this happened so many years ago.
I agree, those firsthand accounts, well, not firsthand, obviously, but going there is actually probably better than experiencing something rather than being taught this your whole life and then seeing it actually and how it went down in history and, like, learning about the historical sites that happened.
Yeah, it can be so, it's like so enlightening to go to places where things have actually happened. I can remember one time we were driving down to Texas to visit family, and my parents made a detour through Birmingham, and we also went to Little Rock, and we got to see where many of these civil rights events took place, like where schools were integrated and where they sprayed people with water. From fire trucks, things like this, it just made it so much more like vibrant, and it just made me thankful that I did not have to go through that. That I did not have to face that to have the opportunity that I have.
Another thing that goes along with that is how Black History Month is taught in our school system educational-wise, rather than I've learned about it since being in kindergarten. I remember that my school, it used to be such a big thing from January to February, and the kindergarteners made posters, and we all learned about it. It's an event in time that we need to learn about so we can better understand how to continue on with our future. I think that Black History Month shouldn't just be one month. I think it needs to kind of continue on and expand as we grow up through life, because it really is just such a deep topic that has so many little compartments that we need to, like, we need access to so we can change what we wronged and help create a better future.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing about how Black history is taught in schools is that it isn't, like, uniform. There's not a standard curriculum. There aren't, it's not set, this is what you teach kids. Sometimes it's taught in some schools, it's not taught in other schools. I know where I went to school, we had a Black History Month assembly, so it was kind of like a once a year thing where you learned about it, where this Black history is American history, and it is interwoven into the fabric of America. So it's not just, it shouldn't be just, in my opinion, it shouldn't be just a once a year thing. I think it should be taught just like any other history, because it is just as much a part as the regular history.
I agree. So, a lot of people don't really think about Black History Month other than this time of year, and it just needs to like expand, and we need to be able, it needs to have points in time, because our history happened every day, like in a certain year, and we need to learn about that every day, not just once a month.
Yeah, yeah, it would absolutely, I think it would be like, beneficial to students to not only know the biggest names in Black history, to not only know what Martin Luther King did and what Rosa Parks did, but to also know what other people did. The everyday stories of just your seemingly average African-Americans, they had made a big impact on history, and it wasn't just one person or two people or just a group of five people that changed history, especially in the Civil Rights Movement, but it was a lot of people that worked together and made a change.
I agree. So now we're going to take a little break. We'll be back in a moment.
In the process of working throughout the South and going to jail and getting beat and being in mass meetings and singing, there's one particular song that became the theme song of this movement. It is a powerful song. You can go anywhere in the world today where there is struggle, and you will find this song, and you will still see people in the streets marching and singing it. It is our gift to the world people in struggle. We want to ask you to stand up and cross your right hand over left and sing with us, "We Shall Overcome."
We shall overcome.
Four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
Hi guys, welcome back. That song you just heard was "We Shall Overcome." If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day with Zainab Adisa and
Sarah Watkins. If you like what you hear and want to join in the conversation, we'd love to have your participation. You can call or text us at 412-200-5975. And please consider letting other people know that Streaming Justice continues until midnight at slvradio.org.
Okay, so this segment we're going to be talking about current events, well, rather last year events that happened. We all know that some pretty new things happened, like such as the topic of police brutality or racial equality, and we're just going to talk about that for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. It may seem like the civil rights movement was a very long time ago, and it did happen about 60 years ago, but it is still something that is really relevant today, and many of the fights and things that people pushed back against then are still continuing to this day. So it's not over.
So the event that made national news from out of Pittsburgh, the police who held up a sign, I think it was...
Yeah, it was absolutely. Pittsburgh Police Chief Cameron McLay, he held up a sign that that was given to him by a protester that said, "I resolved to challenge racism at work," and then it had a hashtag, "End White Silence." And he received a lot of backlash from it, from some people, but I think when he gave a statement, he was not overly apologetic about it, you know, that he really seeks to end racism and to work together with police and community members.
Yeah, social justice doesn't happen. It's not a one-way ticket. It takes a lot of people to help resolve an issue. And if you really feel strongly about it, then you have to get out there. It's not just a one-way. You can't just blame the whole other half. You really can't do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in order to see a change, people have to work together. It's not all like one-sided or anything. There's no way to change like the way the world is without black people, white people, everyone just working together and like listening to each other and coming up with solutions and taking those solutions and moving forward with them.
Yeah. It just takes a lot of work, and if we keep on like hacking at it, one day it could possibly be true. And just with all the violence that's happened, we have to work together, and we can't just be like one-sided. It's an opportunity to help change our future so that future generations will understand and they won't be naive to what happened in the past.
Absolutely, yeah. Even today, there are a lot of issues that still are ongoing, that things like diversity, and whether it's the workplace or in schools, even today, schools are becoming more and more segregated, which might seem strange, because Brown versus Board had happened. This is coming up on the 61st anniversary of that, but today, schools are becoming like more segregated places, so... It's important to stay aware.
We also have the diversity between male and female, like the gender wage gap, and also the gender, yeah, and the race issues between working. And it's more likely for a white male who has a less clean record than a black male to get a job, and that's just really unfair, and it needs to be changed. And
yeah, absolutely. That is, yeah, if we look at statistics, it is like, it can be shocking, but sometimes we need to look at them and to see that's what it really is like. As far as the gender wage gap, there are like numbers that say that it is still like 70 women, a woman earns 77 cents for every dollar a man earns. So that is something that is a civil rights issue that is pressing even today. There are other issues such as mass incarceration. United States is the number one country in the world. It's number one for most prisoners. So that is something that, if we look at it, we can see it's not right, it's not fair, especially when we have laws that don't foster equality.
Okay, guys, I think that's all we have for today. Thank you for supporting Streaming Justice. Up next is more music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day. We have one more last quote for you.
All right. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter."
And this was Zaina Badisa from Pittsburgh Kappa.
This is Sarah Watkins.